I can barely get any reception on this stupid thing. So far, the only station that comes in is some British guys reading news from places I'm not sure exist.
Today, in Kazakhstan, a peaceful demonstration turned to bloodshed as members of the Tuzili tribe flooded Kenpow Square in remembrance of the third anniversary of the Holmesburg Massacre. And now with sports, here's Framtel Tromwibler.
You're listening to The Hockey Show, broadcasting at 101.5 CJUM FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba.
I'm not sure about any of that.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Science is real. From anatomy to geology. Science is real. From astrophysics to biology. A scientific theory isn't just a hunch.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you aboard tonight, everybody. Everybody sort of back in their normal chairs and seats and everything. As Jenna's with us again. Jenna, how are you?
I am just great, thank you.
Got a follow-up after, you took some time to get back to work and back into the swing of things after those exams. How did the second exam go? You all right? Did everything go okay?
Yeah, I got a 91, which, that's great. It's great. Not as good as my 100, but I'll take it.
Yeah, no, and I mean, still, it's fantastic, Mark. So congratulations. Good on you for putting the time in and the studying in and earning a couple of awesome marks, because, as you know, we are big on the student part of student athlete here on this show, and certainly want to make sure that kids are getting the full benefit of going to school. And, I mean, you're doing the Zoom stuff right now too, right, Jenna? Yeah.
Yeah, it's all online, which is, it's great. I mean, I'm not going to complain. I get to go back to school and finish my degree, so I'm not going to complain, but it's definitely a little bit harder. But
speaking of school, well, I was going to say, speaking of going back to finish degrees and get things done, our guest today, we're not going to waste too much of her time because she is a busy woman and certainly has 100 million things going on in her life, but we are certainly grateful for her time, as we will learn all about this fantastic woman's career. So, tonight, folks, we welcome likely the smartest person we've ever had on this show, making me the third smartest person in this conversation. I'm legitimately a Hubble telescope distance away from the other two people in this chat. That fact aside, our guest has a master's degree in neurosciences while earning her PhD studying pediatric concussions. She's the vice president of a biotechnology company. She's a published author in The Athletic, and she's one heck of a hockey player. Regarding that last point, she's played hockey across the globe, including Canada, Kazakhstan, Italy, and China, among the many places that are stamped on her passports. She is a Clarkson Cup champion, a British Columbia Winter Games gold medalist, a U Sports standout, and an ISBHF Women's World Champion. Without further ado, The Hockey Show is proud, honored, privileged, humbled, and pleased to welcome Dr. Carolina Urban to the show. Carolina, how are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for that amazing introduction.
Oh, well, I mean...
I bring you along with me everywhere.
I mean, we don't mind, pumping a few tires, but I mean, it's all true. That's the only thing. It's not like we were we actually probably downplayed some stuff that you've done.
No, that was pretty phenomenal. So thanks for having me on the show today, and I look forward to chatting with both of you.
Yeah, super excited to have you. We always start at the beginning of these interviews, so we're going to jump right back to the beginning then. December 16th, 1985, when a baby girl joined the Urban family in Wrocław, Poland. I hope I pronounced that right, yeah?
You did, actually.
Yeah, I got it right. most people will know that as Wrocław in Poland, but you didn't live there long, though. Your parents made the jump to Kamloops, BC when you were four. So what was life like for young Carolina moving to this new country and settling in this brand new place?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it was, when I was young, I still remember it was really tough because I didn't know English. I had some friends in school, actually one boy who spoke Polish and English, a Polish family, and he really helped me along in kindergarten and grade one until I was able to learn and speak enough. But it really was, and I think it comes back to my passion for hockey. It was hockey that kind of introduced me to being Canadian and gave me the opportunity to connect with my fellow classmates. And right from day one, the first game I watched, I fell in love with hockey.
So you also grew up playing soccer, just like hockey. How did hockey become the sport of choice for you?
I don't know. I think it was Pavel Bure and his amazing looks, to be honest. Soccer was okay. I loved it. I had a great time playing soccer, but I think when it came down to it, there was something about being on the ice that I loved, and maybe it was that it connected me more to Canada versus soccer. I felt was, you know, my parents telling me I have to play soccer because we're European and that's what Europeans do. So maybe that was a little bit of it, but I think skating, I love skating. I love being out on the ice, and I didn't compete.
That's very fair. Were there any other sports that you played or just mostly soccer and hockey?
I actually also did Taekwondo. I did that for 4 or 5 years and I did get my black belt in that. But when hockey took over, then that kind of disappeared out of my life. But it did teach me a lot about respect and as well as discipline. And I also, growing up in BC in Kamloops, I snowboarded all the time, snowboarded and skied the Sun Peaks, the ski resorts, 45 minutes outside of Kamloops. So whenever I wasn't playing hockey, my parents would take me up there.
Obviously, a lot of stuff going on in your life as a kid, you know, busy all the time. So we're not going to jump in too deep into childhood because we have a ton of other stuff to go over. But you did start for the Kamloops Mystic AAA program. 2006 saw you win a gold medal at the British Columbia Winter Games, which bumped you into playing for Team BC at the 2007 Canada Winter Games in Whitehorse, where BC lost to eventual gold medal winner Ontario in the quarterfinals. I mean, obviously, huge exposure in terms of getting into those games, playing on some good teams. So when did the University of Toronto Lady Blues come calling? Because we don't usually see the OUA dip that far west into finding good players.
Yeah, no, that it's very true, especially, I mean, not to age myself, but at that point, that would have been 2006. It was just leading on to the Canada Winter Games. I was very lucky that I had some coaches, both in Kamloops, Greg Hermiston, who went on to, actually is a Hockey Canada scout now, and him and the other gentleman in Team BC were very much about helping us look at university programs. So when I started looking down the path, I knew that I wanted to go to an academically inclined school and my parents weren't going to settle for anything less. So going down that path, I of course looked at all the Canadian universities. I explored NCAA as well, but I didn't think I was going to go to the Olympics. And so school became a higher priority for me. And when I still remember this, in Christmas Eve, I got the email back from Coach Karen Hughes from U of T saying that they're very interested and would like to get to know me more. And we were very lucky because leading up to the Canada Winter Games, there was actually a tournament at University of Alberta. And the tournament was Team BC, Team Alberta, University of Toronto, University of Guelph. And I think it was the team that used to be in Edmonton Chimos.
Yeah, yeah.
And that allowed me to get that exposure to those teams, which now I think back on, I actually forgot about that till you mentioned it, but that was kind of a serendipitous moment that I got to meet the coach. The tournament was in Alberta. We got to play against them and it gave me that extra exposure. And then I did the tour and right when I got onto campus, I remember turning to my mom and saying, sorry, I'm going to come here, coming across the country, leaving you.
That's so awesome. So you ended up playing 4 seasons under Karen Hughes at the U of T starting in 2007 before playing your senior season under head coach Vicky Sanahara and assistant coaches Jaina Hefford and Lori Dupuis. What was that change like for you as a player in terms of the different coaching styles between Hughes and Sanahara? And what's it like having, you know, obviously some pretty big women's hockey names with you on the bench there?
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, Karen Hughes is probably the smartest hockey coach I was ever coached under. Just the little cues and how she was able to teach us certain components of the game. And then when Vicky and Jaina and Lori came along, it was different, but they had also been coached at some point by Karen Hughes, who's Hockey Canada. And they then combined more of the skills, skating, and more fresh out of the game. So that was nice, but they were all fantastic coaches. And it was actually Jaina, I still remember in the 2002 Salt Lake City Olympics when they won the gold medal. And the reason why I wore number 16 was because of Jaina Hefford. And then to have her coach me, and that was, I guess, you know, when Naomi talked about how cool it was to then play against someone who she saw as a role model, I had that same experience when I played under Jaina.
I mean, that's kind of cool, but you sort of get to wear the number of the woman that you sort of looked up to, and then she's your coach. I mean, that's almost, you know, poetic, you know, in terms of the way it sort of happened there. Your Toronto career, though, I mean, really was pretty impressive. You were named the captain of the Varsity Blues in 2009, 2010 in your third year, a year where you went out and scored 10 goals, 18 assists in 27 games to finish 10th in OUA scoring, including a memorable 4-point game against the Guelph Griffins on January 4th, 2010. You recorded 41 goals, 46 assists in your CIS career. You were just the fifth player in U of T history to be named captain in 3 seasons. And you were nominated as U of T's Female Athlete of the Year in 2012. Perhaps the only thing that stood in your way when it came to crowning everything with a national championship was the powerhouse in the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks, who seemed to win every single year.
Don't haunt me.
what stands out the most, though, from your storied hockey, university hockey career anyway, when you think back over everything that you did over those 5 years?
Well, I think those accomplishments, like, I don't look back on them too much, but I do really take my experience there and think about it every day and how amazing it was just being a student athlete and having the opportunity to be on a team with players that want to compete and want to get better every single day. And the whole experience of being at the University of Toronto rink, I don't know if you guys have had the chance to be there, but when you look up into the rafters and you see those first banners of women's hockey up there, and I think it's always been just an honor to be amongst people who were the pioneers in women's hockey, whether it was it just happening at U of T or having coaches like Karen Hughes, Vicky Sanahara, Jaina Hefford, and Lori Dupuis. So I think, to me, when I look back, those are the things I remember.
Speaking of Wilfrid Laurier, I mean, a lot of those players on that team eventually became teammates of yours. do you look at that sort at that team and go like they were the standard, or, I mean, do you guys just sort of go, everybody's still an opponent? Like, they were for you know, the longest time, 3-4 years, were the sort of the gold standard in the OUA.
Yeah, they're a phenomenal team, a well-coached team, and getting to play with some of those players, like Liz Knox is a phenomenal teammate that I would have loved to have on my side when we played. But yeah, they were just all around. They not only were they skilled, but they were very talented and gritty. So that was, they worked hard every single game. And I have to give them props for being able to continue to do that year after year. And I know that coach retired just a few years ago, but there was, I think, like 10 years in a row where they were a powerhouse.
Obviously, playing university hockey is so much fun, and you get the whole team environment, obviously, though a huge part of that is the schooling. So you graduated in 2012 with your bachelor's degree in physical health and education, but your summer 2012 got a little more interesting when you were selected by the CWHL's Toronto Furies in the 5th round of the draft. I mean, I've never been drafted or anything, but I can just imagine, you know, how cool that would be. So how cool is it to be drafted by a pro hockey team? Like, what does that feel like?
Yeah, it was, again, kind of surreal, because when I was at my last year, in that 5th year, and I sat down for coffee with Jaina, and I remember asking her, like, should I continue playing? Should I try to make a CWHL team? Or do you think I should just, you know, just continue on my academic career? And she said, you know, why not go for it? Like, you can skate, you can play the game, and I'll support you along the way. And having her kind of encourage me to go into that was, gave me the inspiration. And then when I got drafted, it was super exciting, and I wasn't expecting it overly. And then being part of the Furies was amazing. Like, I had a great experience there.
We'll talk about one of those experiences, because you did suit up with the Furies in 2012-2013. November 18th, 2012 was a big night. Do you recall why?
Oh, man. No.
You basically crossed off a bunch of stuff on your, on the hockey bucket list that night. You scored your first goal at 18-19 of the third period, assisted by Christy Zamora.
Yeah.
You had your first assist on Shannon Molson's goal in the first period. And it was your first multi-point pro game. I mean, honestly, you know, a lot of people just hope for the best and to skate on, you know, pro ice surface and get out there and maybe, you know, do a little damage. But you kind of did everything on that one night. What's it like, you know, sort of throwing the jersey on that for that first game or that first, you know, couple of games and going, like, this is really happening?
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest thing there was I was playing alongside some phenomenal players like that I used to watch in the Olympics, Natalie Spooner, Rebecca Johnson, and Wakefield, and then you have Tessa Benham on the team and Sammy Joe Small. So I think I was just awestruck all year, and I always took it from the perspective I never expected to, you know, get a lot of ice time, but I was just there to learn from these phenomenal athletes, to learn from the coaches. And I've always just been a student of the game. And anytime I had the experience to play, it was just, yeah, just an honor.
So speaking of being the student, I guess the education side of the coin wasn't pushed to the wayside by this pro hockey career either. 2013 saw you leave the Furies and head west to Calgary, where you enrolled in the University of Calgary's neuroscience department while suiting up for the CWHL's Calgary Inferno. What made you want to investigate concussions?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I actually had a few concussions in my undergrad. I'm sure a lot of hockey players have. And when I was recovering, I noticed that there was still quite the gap between what we understood in the brain and the recovery timelines. And just to give you an example, I remember coming back from a concussion. I cleared all these baseline tests. I did all the exercise protocols and I, you know, felt okay. I wasn't getting headaches, so they cleared me. And we had a playoff game. So I had a few practices and then right into the playoff game. And in that game, I was missing passes under my stick. I was like, kind of when the pace picked up and the motion of the game as well, I kind of forget what was going on and where I was on the ice, which was very weird for me. So that made me look down the, you know, into the literature and see the gaps. And I just started getting involved more in an undergrad way, doing a directed study. And then I decided that I wanted to pursue my master's in neuroscience. And that kind of intro to concussions led me down to wanting to learn more about the brain and about cognitive neuroscience and neuroimaging. So it started in my undergrad and really again, and I always laugh with my parents because, you know, for them being Polish, like hockey, women playing hockey wasn't really a thing. And they always said, well, academics first. And now I sit here probably way too many times. I remind them that everything that has happened in my life in some way or form is related to the experiences I've had in hockey or as a result of hockey. And sometimes even having those concussions led me down this road. So it's all related. And when I went to Calgary, that opportunity to study concussions was exactly what I was looking for. And actually didn't really have an intention of continuing on and playing for the Inferno. But as I got there, the hockey worlds are small and I was introduced to those players and they said, come play.
I mean, that's the one thing I think that, and Jenna and I were talking about this before you joined the conversation, Carolina, is that you kind of did it the opposite way. Like most, you see most players kind of chasing the game to try and stay in it, to try and stay up with it. You actually chased the education and the game chased you essentially in terms of finding, you know, different homes for you. Is it weird to sort of look at your career and go, I kind of went with the education and didn't go with the hockey and look where it took me? And that's the thing that I look at and I go, if it wasn't for the education side, if it wasn't for your pursuit of education, I don't know if we'd have this much of a hockey story to tell.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. And I guess you start to realize the older you get. Also, I was born in 1989. I know online it's 85. I don't know why, but
I was going to say, I didn't think you were that old, and I'm going, but it says that. So, and I was going to say there was two other websites that said that you were born December 17th, I believe, in 1989. Is that correct?
Yeah, December 17th, 1989.
Okay, so we corrected that part then. At least we know the internet's wrong.
Not that old, but yeah, the older I get, the more I realize just hockey. And I try to talk about it even with the kids I coach and the parents, like it doesn't just provide you with a playing ground, but it gives you the skill set. But also you can go anywhere in the world and say, as a female in particular, if you tell someone that you're a hockey player, they kind of look at you and treat you a little bit differently. I would say for me, it's always been a little bit more respect, and I don't know why that is, but it's given me opportunities I definitely wouldn't have had if I didn't play hockey.
I mean, don't get me wrong. If you told me you were a brain surgeon, I'd probably have just as much respect for you. So things seem to go fine in Calgary before an offer of a lifetime sort of came up. Jill McIsaac hunted down you and Chelsea Purcell to look at an option that I don't know if very many people would have. You three jumped over to Europe to play in the EWHL with Asulu Almaty in Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. What was life like in Kazakhstan for, you know, a kid from, well, I mean, kid from Poland, but a kid from BC who legitimately grew up in the big city there?
Yeah, like that was quite the experience. So it was kind of a neat setup. We actually only ended up going to Kazakhstan once for 2 weeks.
Oh.
Yeah, so this team from Kazakhstan is technically their national team. Their like careers are playing hockey, believe it or not, in Kazakhstan. They get paid by the government to be a hockey player. And this team travels to Europe because that's the next best opportunity for them to play. And they'll play in these different leagues against various teams, which include some of the players that play on the Finnish national team, the Swedish national team, and then later on into the Italian national team. And what was particularly interesting is they'd have us come over for like 2 weeks at a time. So we'd fly over to wherever it was in Europe. We'd play on Olympic ice, which I can tell you I was not in good enough shape. And fit in like 9-10 games, and then they'd send us home. And we actually got paid to do that, and we also had the opportunity to get to know those girls a bit. There was a big language barrier, but that's where my Polish came in handy. I could kind of understand a little bit of the Russian, but it was amazing to see that, you know, somewhere that's not typical of what you see as being a hockey country has these women that are doing this as a career, and they travel around and they play hockey and that's all they do. So it was kind of a weird realization for me, because here in Canada, we have the best players in the world, but that's not what they're doing. They're not getting paid to play every day. They're not getting meals given to them. So why is that? So I'm still pondering on that one.
Yeah, that's definitely not something that I would like. It just doesn't seem like a place that would do that. But I mean, considering Canada can't, even the United States for that matter, like there's pro hockey players, but you're not really, maybe you're getting paid a little bit, but you still have to go to work every day. You still have to have your careers. So that is very interesting.
Yeah, I did go to Kazakhstan once, though. It was great. I know it's far. The flight was really long.
Is there a culture shock though? Like, is there a bit of a, like when you get there, like, I mean, obviously you've never been there before and you've only been there for 2 weeks total in your life. Like when you get there, are you kind of like, everything is different. Everything, like, this is way different than home.
Yeah, it was different, but also I think these countries and Poland, including these Eastern European countries and into the Kazakhstan, and have always kind of strived to be more American or Western-like. So there was like this weird sense you could see the cultural differences, but then you'd also see these like stark similarities to what we see in North America. So it was really interesting in that regards. And like, we were in the big cities, so it's also very different than if we went into the countryside. And we went to, it was Astana, which is the capital. Mm-hmm. And then Almaty, which is where the team we paid for is where the like big ski resorts are, and it's a little bit more wealthy. So that would have been neat to see, but we didn't get to see that.
School did not stop for you while you were overseas, as you continued to work from afar with the University of Calgary, earning your master's degree in neurosciences while exploring brain function and communication in pediatric concussions. So being that you're a concussion expert, what's one of the biggest misconceptions that parents have about concussions when it comes to their kids? Because I know even, you know, the girls I coach, they're 13, 14, and one of them gets a concussion. I mean, nobody really has any idea of anything. I can give them some tips, but we still, like you said, there's just those protocols. When you get a concussion playing university, you go through those protocols, you pass the tests, and they send you on your way. So
yeah.
What's the biggest misconception there?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know if it's kind of come out, you know, in the last few years, that if you have three concussions, then everything, you're going to be pulled out of your sport. I think that's a big misconception. And I think also on the other side of it is that the brain is really plastic. And what I mean by that is it recovers, it changes, it relearns, it's always changing. So although we might have an injury, we have also the ability to retrain it and help it get back to where it was. But in that, it is important to identify you do have a concussion, get pulled out, and get the right care or rest that you need. And I think, you know, it is scary to get a concussion, but I also don't think it's the end. And right now, sometimes it's portrayed as career ending, because you see it in, you know, the NHL players, or you see it in the football players. But I think you deal with it as it is. You have a concussion. Let's get you the right care, and let's get you back to the things you love to do, which is play hockey.
I mean, I guess one of the things that we see, just, you know, hockey and certainly university level, you know, is the rush back too. Like, I mean, is there, I mean, you know, you hear the stories, you know, repeated concussions, you know, if you have one and then you get, you know, another jolt to the brain there, that it's worse on the second one, or, you know, twice as worse or twice as bad on the second one. Mm-hmm. Is that, I guess, that myth, or is that, you know, somewhat realistic in terms of, you know, not rushing somebody back, waiting till they're ready to go, and then, you know, making sure that they pass not only, you know, one or two of these tests, but multiple tests in order to get back on the ice?
Yeah, I think it's a difficult and complex question and answer. There is evidence that if you have your second concussion, that it could be more detrimental or take longer to recover.
Yeah.
But usually when you look at that time from the first concussion, it's much closer. So it kind of points to the fact, like you said there, like maybe they're just rushing to get back. We're still trying to understand whether there's a predisposition of someone getting a concussion or certain symptoms, and whether that can perpetuate it. So there's no clear-cut answer yet. And I think it is also because it is such a subtle injury that, in comparison to something like if you have a severe traumatic brain injury, if you do an MRI, we can clearly tell what's going on. But when you look here, if we do a simple hospital MRI, we can't tell. We can't really tell what's really going on. And because in athletics, you have such a demand on your neural systems, on your brain, to respond as fast as possible and to make complex decisions, we're challenging it to the ultimate, but yet we're not really testing it in those situations before we say someone's ready to go. So it's kind of a twofold thing. We need to be better at making sure tests are more specific to sports and more specific to the demands of sports before we put someone back. And if we see something's wrong, then let's train it to get there.
going to be honest, I feel like I'm already smarter about with that answer, because that's, again, you just sort of hear things and see things and you kind of go, okay, well, that's the way it is. But now that things are changing, I mean, again, I guess research changes all the time in terms of learning more and understanding more. Things will change as we go along. So that's good to see. Let's talk about another big moment, though. 2015 saw you dive into another hockey adventure as you teamed up with Chelsea once more and you guys went off to Zug, Switzerland, where you decided that the ISBHF Women's World Championship, that's ball hockey to the layperson who's listening, wasn't good enough to just, you know, go and play. You decided to go and help Canada earn the gold medal there. What was that experience like in terms of winning the gold medal over in Switzerland?
Oh, it was great. So I know ball hockey's not that popular here, but in Europe, it's so popular. Like, the stands were full. There was fans all week, and just a general appreciation for the sport, both on the men's and women's side. So that was really neat. And I think what was cool was to see that our team was made up of people across the country, and just getting to know them and going out to Switzerland, which is beautiful, and play there. And yeah, that was an awesome experience. And sometimes I forget about it. So thank you for reminding me.
I mean, we had Jetta Ratcliffe on the show, and she's a huge ball hockey player, loves the sport. Do you prefer ball hockey over ice hockey, or is it still, you know, give me the winter sport over the gym?
That's a good question. I mean, I love skating. So for me, I think that wins out. But I think more recently, like over the last, since I've moved back to Toronto, there's a ball hockey league that we play in here, and our teams are awesome. Like we have some great Olympic players playing with and against us, and it's a very high level of hockey, but the workout component is unreal. Like you go home and you're like, okay, I've earned whatever I want now. So I love it. In the summers, we play from April to September and then we cut it off, but I know that's something we all missed during COVID last year, and we're hoping that it doesn't get canceled because I need my workouts.
Yeah, those are, it's definitely a crazy workout. My first ball hockey game, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know if I can do it, but you get used to it. And like you said, you get home and you're like, well, I'm going to eat whatever I want now.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it burns calories for a few days after. It's insane. So after that big victory in Switzerland, the hockey stopped for a while as you continued your work in the field of concussions as a PhD student at the University of Toronto's Rehabilitation Sciences Institute as a member of the Concussion Center team. During that time, though, you were also coaching the Toronto Leaside Wildcats. How much fun do you have coaching? Because I know for me, it's like the best part of my day.
Yeah, it's honestly, like, I love everything about it. I mean, there's definitely difficult parts, and usually they're related not to the kids, but to their parents. But yes. Most of the time, like, it's really rewarding. And I've been lucky to have to coach a ton of great kids and have a great coaching staff. And we've been together as a coaching staff for 4 years. So it kind of speaks to how much fun we all have. And I'm really glad it kind of happened at that time where I decided to take a step away from the game, and I needed that release. I needed something, and it fulfilled it in some regard.
The itch to play, I mean, never really sort of ends, I guess, in terms of being a hockey player and certainly playing for as long as you did. You kind of got drawn back into the CWHL as you were coaching in Toronto, this time with the Markham Thunder, where you basically got to scratch that itch a little bit. Things worked out pretty well. 2017-2018 was a big year for the franchise, because not only did you play on a pretty good team, but you ended up hoisting the Clarkson Cup at the end of the season. How cool is that moment for a kid from BC, from a kid from Poland who never heard of hockey when she was growing up?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that was quite the season. I mean, the whole move to Markham was super exciting. The city of Markham really embraced us, and then having the two teams from China, Vanke and Kunlun Red Star, and that experience of going to China was very cool. And then we got off to a good start, and we then went on to, I think it was something like 10 games in a row where we just couldn't put together a win. And we were in Montreal one night in December, right before the Christmas break, and we just all I just got together as a team and went out for dinner. And the next day we tied Montreal, which was great for us. And from that point on, we got a point in every single game after that. So when we were rolling into playoffs, it was just, we had all the momentum, we had the character in the room, and we were there to prove something. And that was really cool to see from our point, like as a player and team, and then the outcome being the Clarkson Cup. So it was just a great experience overall.
Whatever. I watched that game, and I mean, the goal was huge, that, you know, to sort of end the whole thing. Like, I mean, is it weird to sort of, you know, be on the ice and with the cup, and you get to do the sort of the Stanley Cup lap with it? Like, I mean, there aren't many teams that get to do that. And I mean, you guys were one of them that got to do the lap with the Clarkson Cup. Like, it's one of those things that, you know, not many teams will ever get to experience.
Yeah. It's really cool. And I think what was cool for me was to see how many of the kids I coached and their parents, and how many kids within the Leaside organization that were there at the game. So that my team was in the stands. So when I hoist the cup, I make sure to go over to them, because really they were my inspiration all year. And having them there cheer me on was one of the best things.
Obviously, you're extremely accomplished when it comes to, you know, the actual sport and hockey and everything, but you've also had some medical papers published with your work in concussions, but you were also featured as a writer on The Athletic for a few articles, including your experiences in China with the Thunder. How did that opportunity arise, and do you enjoy writing?
Yeah, so actually the opportunity kind of came, I don't remember how it came, but James Murphy, who was starting up The Athletic at that time in Toronto, he was a Globe and Mail writer prior to, and he ended up being from Kamloops and going to the same high school as me. And somehow we got connected, and he just asked if I was interested in doing a few write-ups. And I really enjoy writing. It's something I have to do every day anyway. And one of the reasons I wanted to write is I do find there's still, especially then and still now, a big gap on what people understand about women's hockey, where it's going, and the experiences that are within it. And just, I think anytime we have the opportunity as a player or coach or athlete or whatever it is, we should tell our stories or tell the stories of teammates and the team around us, because there's a lot of learning experiences that come from that. And I was really lucky to kind of meet James out of nowhere and have him ask me to write.
I mean, with the recent PWHPA games, Carolina, one of your articles kind of stood out to me in that you wrote about how being paid to play hockey as a woman was more about, it wasn't just about the money. It was about everything else that it represented as well. It seems that we're inching closer to a professional women's hockey league every day with the success we're seeing and the partnerships that are being forged. There's still a ways to go, unfortunately, but I mean, you know, nothing worth having comes without some sort of fight, in terms of the old adage there. So, I mean, what's your perspective on where the game stands today with respect to when you retired back in 2018 from playing pro hockey? Like, do you see the shifts that are happening as you sort of are an outside observer now?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's really obvious this year there's been a shift. For me, like you said, the getting paid thing, great. Obviously, that's nice for everyone, but I think it's that credibility that comes with you saying you're a pro hockey player and everybody looking around and respecting you to be that you are a pro hockey player, that you have a certain skill set, a certain experience that you've experienced that deserves that recognition. And I think it's starting to get there. I think this past year, I know COVID's been tough, but it has highlighted some of the inequalities, not just for women, but obviously for the Black populations and the Indigenous communities. And I think if we take anything away from COVID, I hope that's seen as kind of the, how to say it, like the reason for COVID happening is we needed to kind of had an internal reset. And you see it in the outcome of, you know, the Leafs partnership, the New York Rangers, the Chicago Blackhawks. And not only that, like the media wants to be there, the Sportsnet, the NBCs of the world, they want to be there. They want to talk about women in sport. And I think that's what's exciting. And with women's soccer and women's basketball, I think they are a bit ahead of us, but it's helping pave a road for us to also go down and grow the game.
So now that you're kind of retired, obviously you still have some ties with coaching and everything, but your current role in the world is Vice President of Medical Programs at Avicanna. Did I say that right? Incorporated?
Avicanna. Yeah.
Okay. So it's a biotechnology company that develops cannabis for medical purposes. There's obviously been a lot of research coming out about, you know, medical marijuana and stuff, but how does one go from concussion research to medical marijuana? Like, what's the connection there?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, I think as an athlete, you're always looking for different ways to help, whether it's boost your performance or help with, let's say, pain. And when I was at University of Calgary doing my master's there, the lab of Dr. Matthew Hill, he's done a lot of research around the endocannabinoid system and how you can modulate different receptors or different neurotransmitters to affect certain things in the body, such as appetite, anxiety, depression. And of course, where cannabis or cannabinoids come into play is that they bind to some of those receptors. They also bind to various receptors that are related to pain. And we're continually discovering more of what they can do. So I was attracted to this idea that we have something in our backyard that, you know, I don't smoke. I don't think inhalation is the method to use it, but for some, it might be. For me, I have the stigma around smoking that is just personal. And so if you can extract those cannabinoids and put it into like an oil tincture, or whether it be a capsule or tablet, or even a topical gel, and have it help you in some way, then I think that's great, because it's natural at the end of the day. And really seeing the results in the states of when medical cannabis has been introduced to those states, there's been a drop of opioid use by 30%. I think that's pretty phenomenal. So I think it's just a new frontier, and it's fun to learn about all the potential ways it could help people.
Not that I'm gonna sit on this topic and grill you forever, but I mean, we've seen a lot of the NHL players, you know, guys like Dan Carcillo, guys like Patrick Cote, guys that are sort of, you know, the enforcers in the game, sort of really turn to, you know, medical marijuana as a way to sort of deal with, like you were saying, some of the pain, some of the stuff that they go through. Is that, I mean, in terms of the concussion research, is that where it sort of ties into, in that, you know, there are chances that it could help, you know, recovery, chances that it could help, options to get back on the ice, I won't say faster, but at least a little healthier?
Yeah, like there is some research going on in the States around whether it actually helps with brain recovery. And I'm not too sure on the results of that. But what I do know is that the cannabinoids can help more with those symptoms, symptom clusters, we call them, like pain, sleep, depression, anxiety, which are usually present among many different things, like whether you have a chronic pain disorder, or you have concussion, or you have epilepsy. There's usually a certain subset of symptoms that co-occur. And what we're noticing is that cannabinoids can play a role in helping attenuate those. So I think that's where the link is, whether it's related to somebody's anxiety or even in PTSD. We see a lot of veterans using cannabis to help their post-traumatic stress symptoms. So I think we're still trying to understand what it could all do. It might not be, you know, a therapy for something, but if it can help you in those symptoms, then it's definitely worth exploring.
We got about 8 minutes to go here. Not going to take up all of your evening with this, even though we could probably talk about this for hours, but you want to do some fun stuff before we get out of here? Some goofy questions that'll make you laugh a little bit and kind of roll your eyes at our dumb questions.
Love it.
In your illustrious hockey career, you have worn number 3 in your rookie season with U of T. You were number 16 for the final four seasons, number 67 with the Furies, number 6 with the Inferno, number 96 with the Thunder, 16 at the ISBHL World Championship, number 24 over in Kazakhstan. Obviously number 16 because of Hefford, we knew that, but it seems like sixes always seem to get in there. Is there a six reason for that? Is it just because of the 16 and the relationship to that? Why did you choose those numbers? Or does any of those numbers stand out other than 16?
Usually it was because I couldn't get 16.
Okay.
So you go to the 96 or 67, but 96 was also Pavel Bure's number. So that one, three that, for no reason.
That's fair. Yeah.
So after your win in 2018 with the Thunder, you got to meet Justin Trudeau. So what is the Prime Minister like when he's just a fan of yours?
Oh, yeah. He seems like just such a down-to-earth guy. Like, love to go for a coffee with him.
I mean, did you guys get the full tour of the parliament and all that, right? Yeah?
Yeah, we did. Unfortunately, there was something going on with that huge trade deal between Canada and US and at that time point, so he didn't get to spend too much time with us. But when he did, he was present. Like, you know, sometimes you meet someone that's super busy and you can tell they don't really care to be there. Like, he was there. We gave him the jersey, he like threw off his clothes and we're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. No, he was just present, and that was refreshing and not expected. And that was a really neat experience to be the first and so far the only women's hockey team to get to go to Parliament. And a big shout out to the mayor of Markham and Mary Ng, who's now the minister of small business in Canada, for doing that.
As of right now, I believe the Thunder are the only women's hockey team that have a jersey that any prime minister has as well. So you guys are still holding that that title as well. So congratulations. Mm-hmm. You did a Puck Talks live in front of a live studio audience. You know, number one fear in the world is public speaking for most people. Do you get nervous in front of crowds when you're doing something like that?
I think I've just had enough experience. You know what? Coaching makes you speak in front of people all the time. So I think that's helped. And I actually prefer Q&As. If I have to present, like, for example, 20-minute presentation, there's too many things. I go off on tangents and never finish in time. So I enjoy those types of situations.
So education obviously was a huge thing for you, but your mom just recently received her doctorate. Is that correct?
That's right.
That's so awesome. In what field is she a doctor?
Microbiology. So she's the largest of them all.
That is crazy. Like, your family is just, that's amazing.
Like, thank the first first family of education right there. That is crazy. Like, yeah. Congratulations to your mom. That is super awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, she worked hard at that. Coming to Canada kind of interrupted that from happening earlier. And just when I finally went to university, she said, okay, I have to do it. So it was an inspiration. And during the last few years of my PhD, it was tough to finish out, but she reminded me, she's like, no, I did this, you know, later on in my life, you can finish this. So it was great to have her guidance.
I mean, I'll ask the question because I think it's kind of, I mean, I did some reading on it. Like, Wrocław is a university town. Was she going to school there? Like, is that where she met your dad then?
She did meet my dad in Wrocław, yeah. And she went to school there at the, I think it was the Polytech Microbiology, I don't know.
Something like that, yeah.
They're really well known for the virology and understanding microbials. See, I can't even speak to it because it's over my head. But, so yeah, it's my grandpa was a physicist. So I don't think I had too much opportunity to not be in academia in some regards.
You guys are like legitimately like leading all science categories at this point. Like, from microbiology to, you know, to neuroscience to physics, like, you guys have it all covered. The one question that we always ask, because I think it says a lot about not only yourself, but your journey and certainly, you know, your self-reflection. But what advice would you give, Carolina, to pre-University of Toronto 17-year-old Carolina Urban about life, knowing how everything has sort of turned out for you?
Say yes to any opportunity that comes your way, even if you don't think you're prepared. you don't know what door is going to open and what opportunity is going to come flying your way. So always say yes. I'm say yes, think about it later and try to figure out how you're going to do it. And obviously do it to the best you can, but there's going to be a lot of opportunities coming your way throughout university, and try to take them all in while you can.
Final question for you before we let you get out of here. Obviously women's hockey is, you know, taken leaps and bounds forward since, you know, the dawn of the CWHL, and certainly things have changed a lot. You don't have to be, we're not asking you to look into a crystal ball or anything, but say in 5 years' time, where would you like to see the game? What are you looking forward to in terms of where the game will be or will surpass at that point in 5 years' time?
I mean, it would be great if there was a WNHL. I think, you know, the infrastructure of the NHL would go a long way to growing the game. If you guys watched on Sunday to see the broadcast and just how professional and how great it looked, I think I would love that every Sunday night or Saturday night, whatever night it is, I can sit down with a beer and watch a women's hockey game. And I think you'll get there.
Jenna and I have talked about this a little bit, but like, why couldn't that happen? I mean, and again, the only reason I ask is that, again, the Rangers and Bruins played earlier than day at Madison Square Garden, and then the women's game happened on Sunday night. Like, my question, and again, this is a Sportsnet / NHL thing, but my question was always, why can't there be an afternoon game and then an evening game, either, you know, men or men then women or women then men, whichever you want to do, like every weekend? Like, that would be the Hockey Night in Canada setup. And I don't understand why that can't be a regular thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm not sure why, but I feel like everybody's knocking on their door now to say, hey, we're here and we're ready. And maybe even a few years ago, the leagues weren't ready and weren't in the state where they are now. And I don't know that the NHL really thought about growing their game beyond, you know, the typical fan base into women and other different populations. So maybe it's just they needed time to develop too and believe in the strategy and believe in women's hockey and women.
Before we let you get out of here, anything you want to say, anything you want to shout out to, anybody you want to shout out to before we let you on your way here?
Well, just a big thank you for you guys taking your time and talking to me tonight. It was really nice, and good luck on your show. And please let me know if there's anything I can do for you. And I had a great time. Thank you.
Honestly, if we have any neuroscience questions, we know who to come to. So. No, in all seriousness, I mean, Jen and I love talking to, you know, to great women's hockey players, and certainly the story of you know, your education sort of side of things is remarkable. And again, we're always looking for good student athletes. You certainly put the student in student athlete for everything you did, you know, in your career so far. So again, we're looking forward to great things coming out of, you know, out of Toronto that you're doing as well, Carolina. So keep up the great work, and yeah, doors always open if you want to come back. We'd be happy to have you back anytime.
Awesome. Thanks, Trevor and Jenna.
Thank you.
So there is Dr. Carolina Urban of the University of Toronto Lady Blues, where she played for 5 years from 2007 until 2012. Put up a heck of a career there, obviously, where she helped the Lady Blues to a number of great seasons. I mean, obviously, you know, you can't win every year, but she was outstanding there. Again, she had, you know, 41 goals, 46 assists in her career. It's a heck of a U Sports career for her. So congratulations on that. Probably more impressive, though, as we made clear in the interview, the student athlete part, the student being the most important, as she graduated from Toronto with her Bachelor of Science in Physical Health and Education, moved on to Calgary, where she earned her master's degree in neuroscience, and then completed her PhD in Toronto studying pediatric concussions. Again, an outstanding career in the classroom by Dr. Carolina Urban, and really it speaks volumes to the student athlete sort of emphasis that we've been putting on our shows lately. Last week we had Regan Wright on, who's a medical student out at the University of Alberta. Her career basically started off with her being an honors student all the way throughout junior high and high school, right into university, where she, you know, continues to do amazing things in the classroom. We just heard from Dr. Carolina Urban, who has done outstanding work in the classroom in her career. And really, for both of those players, I mean, hockey has been front and center for them in terms of getting them to university. But once they get to university, really the classroom work has been, just as important to, if not more important, to where they're going in their careers. So hockey will get you places. Education will take you further, though. And that's, I think, the emphasis that we need to put on these last couple of shows, folks, is that legitimately, if you have a student or a child who's struggling in school or may not be enjoying school in terms of their virtual classrooms or anything like that, we heard Jenna achieve 100% and a 91% on her recent exams, and she's doing everything by remote. So it's possible. You got to put the work in, though. But I mean, if you put the work in and get your education, folks, there's no telling where you can go in this world. And if you're like Dr. Carolina Urban, she chased her education and the hockey came along for the ride. I mean, basically, she played hockey everywhere she went to school, not the other way around. And that's an important distinction to make, because in today's day and age, I mean, you got to have an education to get somewhere. And that's a very important fact when you're looking at future sort of careers for where you want to go in life. A couple of notes before we get out of here. A big shout out to three players from Manitoba: Kristen Campbell, Bridget Laquette, and Jocelyn The Rock. The three Manitobans are currently out at the Canadian National Team camp in Halifax, getting ready to hopefully make the team, as they'll be playing at the Women's World Championship coming up in Halifax and Truro in, I believe, in May, if they get everything sort of organized correctly through the IIHF. So good luck to those three. Obviously, want to see those three playing nationally and playing on the on Team Canada, which would be fantastic. Also want to shout out to Winnipeg Avros forward, Nora Collins. Nora accepted an offer from the University of Manitoba this week to join the Bisons, and she'll be coming to the University of Manitoba in the coming years. Happy to have Nora aboard, and certainly we'll talk to her and get to know her a little bit as we get to know the rookies coming up when we get back to University of Manitoba to do some of these shows. With that, folks, though, we're going to get out of here a little bit earlier tonight. Got a couple of commercials to play that that we need to get in. Obviously, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to Dr. Carolina Urban for giving us her time tonight. And she gave us an incredible interview about her life and her career. Stay tuned, folks. Free Range Radio with Skippy coming up next on the station here. Make sure you tune in next week here on 101.5 UMFM. It is the Hockey Show. We'll see you next Thursday, everybody. Take her easy.
Science is real, from astrophysics to biology. A scientific theory isn't just a hunch.
You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg.
Game on!
Game on!
Hey, UMFM listeners, did you enjoy that previous show? If so, UMFM is seeking new volunteer contributors who want to produce engaging spoken word content. Why not start a radio show on UMFM to tell your story and learn some great new skills while doing so? We offer remote training to help you get set up to record from the comfort of your own space. Get in touch with us at info@umfm.com to sign up for volunteer training today. The next round of training sessions are starting soon, so don't delay. We can't wait to hear your voice on 101.5 UMFM. Although your classes are being held via remote, your friends at the UMSU Service Center are still here to help you. Whether you need to pay your tuition, obtain a new student card, or just need some general University of Manitoba-related information, the friendly staff at the UMSU Service Center has the answers you need and will point you in the right direction. We're currently open Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m., so come visit us in room 101 on the main floor of UMSU University Center, call us at 204-474-8211, or email us at umsu@umsu.ca.